From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Alex Clark pushing the buttons for us. Doing a great job. So glad to have you here. So many things going on in Michigan right now. We had the opener of bow season on October 1st. We got our another waterfowl season coming up. Some of the waterfowl going on already in the state. It's very difficult to do everything. And unfortunately, that is what I love to do in Michigan. I love salmon fishing. I love walleye fishing, bass fishing, goose hunting, duck hunting, turkey hunting, deer hunting. It's a sickness, and I talk about it more than I do it. So, you know, what do you do? We are brought to you in part by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral out of Osseo, Michigan. Lucky Buck time is year-round, but you can get yours out now. And check the rules out, lucky-buck.com, as to how and when and where you can apply your Lucky Buck. All of those rules are on there. Abe is doing a great job updating the website so you have all the information you need. Also brought to you by Strother Archery, our new bow sponsor here on Wild Michigan, the official bow of Wild Michigan, shooting the Wrath SHO right now. Absolutely love it. And I've got such a sweet looking combination. You can ask for the Wild Michigan combination. It doesn't exist, but it is the pewter Cerakote with the black real tree limbs. Awesome. Awesome looking. Very happy about that. And we're going to talk turkey hunting right now because our good friend Tracy Breen had posted a picture up of his fall turkey, and I realized that I forgot about fall turkey this year. September 15th, they opened up, and you can purchase a permit because in the YY section of Southern Michigan, there's like 45,000 permits for fall. You can take a hen in turkey, although a lot of people don't like to do that, but you can take a hen, you can take a tom, and the opportunities are out there. They're endless, and you know what? You can actually take one while you're deer hunting. So, you know, a little added bonus, but make sure you have that permit. And there are ways. Fall turkey is a very different type of hunting if you are targeting them. And every year since we found out about this, we've been talking to Brett Berry. He is a Zinc Pro Staff member. Zinc Avian X decoys, by far the best decoys on the market. Love them to death. Brett Berry joins us right now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing real good, Duran. How are you doing today?
Good, good. And I know you're a Zinc Pro Staff member, but you have to have a regular job. You're working the overnight shift, and I appreciate you getting up. And you actually got up early, because it's like Christmas when you're on Wild Michigan.
Yeah, you know what? It is fun. I always love talking to you and talking hunting, and especially turkey hunting. That's my passion. I love it.
You know, I wish I could focus. I'm like an outdoorsman with ADD, man. I can't focus on one species, but you do. You turkey is your thing in the spring. You're out calling, but the fall is a completely different style because you're not really calling birds in.
Well, it is completely different in the sense that you're not just targeting gobblers, you're targeting turkeys, period. We hunt either hens or gobblers, and we're hunting them with dogs, where in the springtime you're not allowed to hunt them with dogs. That's the big difference for us.
Now, the purpose of the dog, because I know, you know, turkeys flock up. You've got groups. You know, I've seen a lot of hen groups, a lot of toms coming together. Last year I had about 13 toms scratching and pecking behind me, and you know, I kind of got busted up in the tree, so they kind of made a straight line, took my shot at two of them actually, and missed both times, which is okay, is a complete miss. But you know, the opportunities are kind of different, and hunting with dogs, how are you working dogs into this whole mix?
Well, I've got a couple specialty bred dogs. I've got two of them that came out of Lowry, Virginia from the John and J.T. Burns bloodline. They're a cross between English Setter, English Pointer, and a plot hound. And the way it works, Duran, is we go into a woods and we know that it's got turkey somewhere in it. We don't have to know specifically where. I do a lot of scouting and trying target food sources where I know, you know, look for scratchings, fresh sign that turkeys are using this particular area. We'll walk into that area with the dogs, and I'll try and walk in on the downwind side and let us use the wind to aid the dogs in finding them. And they go down, so we just course down through the woods. They range out 100, 200, 300 yards. They come back in, check in, go back out. And when they hit that flock and find that flock, they'll run right into the middle of them, barking and scattering them.
Now, you've just created pandemonium with these birds. How are you getting them back?
Well, after the dogs get a real good break, the wood settles down quite a bit. And these turkeys, safety is in numbers. It's not like springtime where the gobbler's off by himself, doesn't want anybody else around him, wants the hens to come to him, you know, and a single hen, double hen comes in, whatever, he breeds them, and then they'll go off by themselves to nest. In the fall, everybody's getting ready for winter. The predators are getting ready for winter. They're getting ready for winter. So safety is in numbers. They want to be in that flock. They want to be safe. They want to feel safe, and they want in that flock. You know, 15 eyes or 16 eyes are better than 2 eyes. So they feel a lot safer when they're flocked together. So once that break happens, it's probably within anywhere from 15 minutes to a half hour. Depending on the flock composition, they will start trying to come back to that scatter site and regroup.
Speaking with Brett Berry, a Zinc Pro staff member, AvianX Decoys. Again, there's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Types of calls. I mean, there's got to be an assembly call out there that they're using to say, hey, look, everything's clear. I'm over here. Are you using that call?
No, you know what? If it is a hen poult flock, in the fall there's 4 different flock types. There's hen poult flocks. There's all hen flocks that do not have poults. There's all gobbler flocks, and then there's that mixed flock. In the hen poult flock, we're primarily doing a lot of whistling and kikiing. You can do some soft yelping, but the poults are so imprinted on the adult hen, the adult mother's voice, that you're not going to outcall her. If we're calling and I've got 3 or 4 different birds kikiing and coming in from different directions and they're coming in, if that mother hen walks up to within 80, 100 yards, and it's happened numerous times, she'll walk right in, get kind of tight, get 60, 70, 80 yards just out of gun range, and she'll start assembly yelping. Those birds will shut down, quit calling, and they will go straight to her. I don't care if they're 20 yards from you, they will turn and go straight to her. So in that case, I usually will let the dog out of the bag and let them go get her out of there. Get her, chase her, fly her, get her out of there. Otherwise, you're not going to kill a bird.
Man, that a lot of work involved. A lot of work, well, Brett.
Yeah, it's a lot of work for the dog. So you know what I mean?
I get it.
They do the work, and we sit back. But it's fun. I mean, and when we're set up, Duran, it's neat to see these dogs climb into a clean. I mean, they're going from 100 miles an hour going down through the woods, chasing turkeys, scattering them to all ends of the earth, to coming back, climbing into a camouflage duffel bag, curling up in a ball, and laying still while we start calling these birds back one at a time to shoot them.
Unbelievable. Brett Berry is joining us here on Wild Michigan, wildmichiganradio.com. Brett, and you know what? This is all, as much as I love the AvianX decoy, it's without the decoys.
Oh, yeah. The decoys are incredible. You know, you've used them in the springtime. They're absolutely incredible in the spring. They're just as incredible in the fall. In the springtime, I like to use the breeder and the Jake decoy and throw in a feeder just for some realism. In the fall, I'll put out 2-3 feeders and a breeder and a looker. If it's a hen poult flock, if it's a all-gobbler flock, I'll set up a couple different 2-3 Jake decoys.
Okay, hold that, Brett. We'll come back. We'll talk decoy strategy in a couple minutes. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, Alex Clark in the studios of the Michigan Talk Network. Oh, it's fall. You know that sound, Brett?
Oh, man, that sounds nice. I love it. I know it well.
You gotta love these apps on phones nowadays.
Oh, there's a nice kiki.
You like that? See, I wish I could do that. But it's one of those, you know, they've got these apps. And you know what? They're great tools to teach people. If you want to start learning how to call, these apps are awesome. And there's one that I was playing for a friend of mine one time. We were talking about different calls in the spring. And he's a very accomplished bow hunter. And I played this. Of course, it only goes off once for me. You know, which is the purr.
Yeah.
And that's the... Hey, 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 big fella!
Yeah, that's a bread and butter call there. When they're getting in close, they're 60, 70 yards out. You need them 20 more yards, and tell them to wait right back and do a little bit of clucking and purring, and that usually seals the deal.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But let's go back to the decoy setup for fall, because I wasn't really aware of you know, being able to use the decoys that much. I know you guys go out and you bust up the flocks and you try and kind of, you know, get them to come back in to that point of breakup. But, you know, using the decoys, you can still use them?
Yeah, in the fall, they're almost even a bigger tool. They're as big in the fall as they are in the early spring. When, you know, the leaves are coming down, Duran, and the woods is getting pretty open. These turkeys are pretty skittish. I mean, they just had a predator run in and scare the crap out of them. They've gone, they've flown, they were chased, they're out of there. Now they're coming back, they're nervous, they want back together. They're hearing your call, and they're coming down through the woods. And what I like to do is I like to set up on edges. You know, and deer hunters know this. When you're walking down through the woods, you look for those edges, those little travel corridors that deer like to travel. I do the same thing with turkeys. I look for those edges where there's two to three different edges coming together, and it's at that junction that I want to set up. These turkeys are pretty comfortable traveling these edges, and as they're getting closer and they're closer and closer and they're hearing your call, they're locked in, they got you pretty much pinpointed, they step into that 40-yard, 50-yard range, and they're looking down through the woods, and the woods are pretty open in late fall going into winter. They don't see another bird. They slip out of there. They're not going to hang around. It's pretty fast. So what I like to do is I like to use four or five decoys, and I like to create the illusion that the flock is regathering right here in front of me, 12, 15 yards.
See, and that's pretty important when you can create the illusion, because these birds' eyesight is so keen. And they know their surroundings. And we talk about animals in general, knowing their surroundings better than you. I don't care how many days a week you go in there, they are on a different level. They are on, you know, their perspective is completely different. So they see the subtle differences that we may overlook.
Absolutely. I read, and I believe it was Lovett Williams from Florida that recently passed away. He was a big biologist, turkey biologist, pretty much. He was a wildlife biologist, but he did a lot of turkey stuff. He wrote in an article many years ago when I first got into turkey hunting that a turkey, if you walked into a room and or into any area and just kind of took a quick look around, it would take you several minutes to digest what's there. For a turkey to walk in and do the same thing, it's seconds. It's just seconds. They can walk in and they know what's there and they can digest it. So if there's something out of place, or if there's something that, you know, I'm hearing a bird call and I got you locked into that tree, and they step in into that 60-yard range and there's not another turkey there, they're out of there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they know. Look, we can't comprehend what they see and how they analyze. Look, we can study their physicality, their motions, their movements, and get a basic perspective on things, but they know better than we ever will.
Oh, that's absolutely. That is for sure, Duran.
Now, let's move ahead. Let's go through fall a little bit. After fall season's done, What are you looking to do with your decoys? How are you storing them? How are you putting your gear away? Because, I mean, we still have calls that we've been using. What's a good way to store the calls?
Well, the turkey calls, I just kind of clean them up a little bit. I've got a handful of friction calls that I'm carrying with me. The Thunder Ridge series aluminum calls, you can kiki on those real nice. There for those windier days, we get a lot of windy days in the fall, so you want something that's able to kiki and yelp and whistle that'll get out there. Just clean them calls up, and I just kind of put them away, pack them into a... I've got old shoe boxes that I just kind of pack everything away. I put it in the house so that it's not out in the garage, that it's staying, you know, in a warm house, so they don't sit out in that cold and maybe get frozen or crack or whatever. As far as the decoys go, I just those I throw up on a shelf. I just leave them fully inflated. I'll pull them out of the bags. I make sure that the bags are dry and that the decoys are dry, and I just set them up on a shelf, and they'll sit there until springtime. There's really not much you got to do.
Now, talk about, speaking with Brett Berry, he's a Zinc Pro staff member, talk about the new decoys, the new turkey decoys, because they're a bit smaller than the ones I've got.
Yeah, the last year, Zinc came out with the new line of the Avian X decoys, and it's not really a new line. What they did was they redesigned the breeder, the feeder, and the looker. The big feature that they did was they cut down, they took them down 2 pounds. They're 2 pounds lighter now. The body size is about 15 to 20% smaller. And they added peg legs to the bottom of them just to give that a little bit more realism, so that they don't look like a lollipop sticking up in the middle of the woods, just sticking up. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
And then they changed some of the detail in them. Now, the looker had a real hard look, and what we were seeing was that that looker decoy was kind of putting some turkeys on edge. They were almost, it was basically almost like it was too alert. Like, hey, something's just not right there. So the turkeys were a little bit on edge when they would see that looker. So they brought her head down a little bit, and they turned her head a little bit, turned it sideways just a little bit, and it made a huge difference. The breeder and the feeder, they did the same thing. They brought its head down a little bit more, and it turned it to the left so that it looks like it's like reaching to grab a bug or an acorn or whatever on the floor. Just a little bit more lifelike. And the breeder hen, they brought her head down just a little bit more and put her more into a breeding pose. And I'll tell you what, it makes a big difference. The breeder, there's something about that breeder hen that that attracts hens too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are just, if you've got the feeder out, the breeder, and the looker, and a hen comes down through the woods in the spring or fall, they a lot of times go straight to that breeder, and they go right to her, and they try and put that breeder for some reason into dominance, showing them that that they're the dominant bird. So that's pretty critical.
All right, Brett Berry, appreciate you joining us. It's pretty simple. Look up Avian X decoys. Appreciate you joining us, brother. Best of luck to you this fall, and I'll be talking to you more. Real soon.
Sounds good, Duran. Good luck to you.
Thanks, man. Definitely, definitely great stuff. Check them out. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Gretzinger from Michigan Out of Doors Television, and you're listening to the man, the myth, the legend, Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan.
Bow, bow, bow. Bow, 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 bow. Like a honeybee beating on my screen door, I got a little buzz in my head.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host of the Michigan Talk Network all over the Great Lakes State. New book out. Just received a new book in the mail from our good friend Richard P. Smith. Bear and whitetail expert. He has a brand new book out called Black Bear Hunting, the ultimate reference. RichardPSmith.com is where you can find him. A lot of very cool color photos. And Richard has literally walked with bears up near his home in Marquette, Michigan. Has taken some trophy black bears. And has a lot of credit to his to his research. And I mean, he even has shot placement on bears and things like that, and how to judge, field judge black bears. Because, you know, look, if you've ever bear hunted, I have, there's that whole ground shrinkage thing. A lot of factors involved in bear hunting, but Richard P. Smith's brand new book, Black Bear Hunting, The Ultimate Reference, is out and about, and we'll have Richard on the show here in the next couple of weeks to talk about that as he gets ready to do his book signings throughout the winter portions of the month. Joining me on the phone right now, Jeremy Tricola, Icebreaker Merino Wool. Jeremy, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks, Rand. Appreciate you having me on.
Not at all. Now, last year we were introduced to Icebreaker Merino Wool. When we think wool, look, man, I'm thinking Woolrich. I'm a Michigan guy. I'm thinking grandpa's old red flannel wool that weighs 16 pounds when you get it on, and when you get wet, it weighs 40. The properties of wool for warmth are great, but, you know, again, traditionally, you know, you think wet, you think itchy, you get cold, but merino is a completely different thing when it comes to types of wool. And until last year, I didn't know about that. So could you give us a little breakdown about merino?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think what you mentioned about kind of traditional wool, you know, with kind of itchy, scratchy, heavy, you know, what really separates traditional wool from merino, it starts at a fiber level. So with traditional wool, part of that itchy, that scratchy is that traditional wool is a really short, rigid fiber. So the shortness of the fiber actually is that pilling. So your grandpa's red flannel sweater that has all those little balls built up all over it, that's the length of the fiber actually pilling out. So if you think about kind of that pilling happening, that means more exposed ends. More exposed ends on a rigid fiber means that you got more ends kind of pricking into your skin. So that's why you kind of get that itchy, scratchy feeling with traditional wool. When we're talking about merino, merino is a long, slender fiber, so the length actually prevents that pilling. So, you know, for the length of the garment, you're not going to have kind of those little wool balls billing up on the outside. And then as far as the slenderness of the fiber goes, you know, when it presses against your skin, it actually bends against your skin rather than, you know, pricking into it. So that's why you get a really soft hand with kind of merino fibers. So, you know, when we're talking about kind of the fundamental difference, it starts at the fiber level, and then it, you know, moves right on into the fabric. So the fact that it is a lighter weight fiber means that we're able to kind of do a really technical, lightweight layering system with merino wool, which is, you know, kind of different, like you said, than people are used to with traditional.
You know, I've been using the Icebreaker Merino for the past year. You guys sent some samples, and about this time last year, I was salmon fishing, and, you know, you've got these waders on, and they're heavy. You know, the neoprene's heavy, and it was kind of a warm day. So when I got out of the water from about mid chest down, it was soaked. I mean, I was sweating, and I was talking to a buddy of mine, and I had taken my waders off, and literally 10 minutes later, it had gone from being soaked to completely air dried.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was shocked. I'm looking at this t-shirt going, okay, this is wool, and I was soaked, but I never itched, and it dried. I mean, it air dried fast, which really shocked me.
Right, and you know, part of the reason for that is that merino's so good at wicking the moisture away because it's a natural fiber. So you can kind of correlate it to, you know, if you jump out of the shower, your hair's wet, right? So, you know, with this being a natural fiber, you're actually wicking the moisture through the fabric itself, whereas with a synthetic fabric, a synthetic base there, or underwader piece, you know, it doesn't have that ability to actually wick the moisture out through the fabric. So that's why you kind of get that moisture, you know, kind of that clammy feeling that happens underneath the garment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're obviously sweating, but that sweat actually moved right through kind of the leggings. And then obviously once you kind of got out of those waders, you know, that stuff is going right through the fabric. It's being evaporated out. You know, that obviously helps to keep you cool. And then we do know that, you know, wool is also going to help keep you warm when it's wet. So, you know, I'd imagine it wasn't too cold, but, you know, certainly a really solid option for underwaders.
Yeah, it really was a solid option. And again, to be able to, you know, have that moisture, which I didn't even know I was that warm, to be honest with you. When you have neoprene like that, you feel like you got a leak in your waders or something because you're sweating so much. But when I peeled them away and looked down, I was like, wow, this is going to be bad. But it was kind of a very different. It just gave me a completely different feeling, and to know that it has those properties is really beneficial, because when you're in the cold and you sweat, you tend to get more cold. But when you have your body pulling away, you have the merino wool pulling away that moisture, it's going to extend your time in the stand or in the blind.
Absolutely. And, you know, it really comes back to that breathability. So, you know, you talk to a lot of guys that are, you know, in a blind or sitting up in a tree stand, and, you know, maybe they're wearing a glove liner or some kind of synthetic glove. What happens is their hands are sweating, right? And since we're not wicking that moisture through the fabric, you're getting really clammy, you're getting sweaty, you're getting built up under there. So, you know, people that find the merino liner, find a merino glove, you know, that breathability, it's taking longer for the sweat to even form on your hands. And when it does, it goes back to what we're talking about with wicking right out through the garment. So it really is a kind of a perfect marriage for, you know, hunters, fishermen, guys sitting in tree stands, and certainly folks that are hiking quite a ways to get in there. Because obviously you're sweating as you get into wherever you're hiking into, and the fact that you're not going to stop and kind of get that clammy, sweaty, or chilly feeling is obviously a huge benefit.
Jeremy Tricola is joining us here on Wild Michigan, our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Icebreaker merino wool is what we're talking about. Jeremy, you said there are different types of merino. There's like Australian, Spanish, New Zealand. What separates these?
You know, it is kind of, it's a climate thing. It's also a food. It's also how they're cared for. You know, Icebreaker Merino, we work directly with about 187 families across, you know, the Southern Alps in New Zealand. The sheep are left to kind of roam wild and free across about 3.5 million acres. So, you know, these guys are not living in fenced-in ranges. In fact, you know, what accounts for their fences is essentially rivers. You know, they're pretty skittish and they don't like to cross any kind of water. So it's a combination of the climate where these guys live, how they're cared for, and the food that really produces the finest micron of merino wool. So to your question about, you know, where does other merino come from, there is Australian merino, there's Spanish merino. You know, there is merino that they're experimenting with in kind of Patagonia and places like that. And it really is, you know, a combination of, like I said, climate, food, and kind of the way that these guys are raised. As a point of reference, you know, New Zealand merino only accounts for about 2% of the world's merino supply. So you can imagine, you know, that other 98% is coming from other places. And it's really obvious, you know, if you were to touch kind of an Australian merino garment versus a New Zealand merino garment, the New Zealand merino, being a finer micron, has a much softer hand.
Yeah, I can attest firsthand how soft this stuff is, because when I grabbed a pair of the undergarments of the base layers, I was shocked, you know, because look, your mind is so set on itch and scratching, and it was such I didn't want to say this, but man, it feels good. I really didn't want to kind of out myself when it comes to, you know, enjoying a fine undergarment from a fine base layer, but I can't tell you how soft this stuff is. And, you know, like George Costanza, if it were socially acceptable, I would be ensconced in merino.
And that's the typical reaction to folks that, you know, put on a piece of Icebreaker merino. The initial reaction is, you know, there's no way this stuff's wool. Everybody's used to that grandpa's wool that we talked about, itchy, scratchy, can't wash it. And so the fact that we have something that's such a soft hand, is such a lightweight, and is meant to be a layering system that's so breathable that if you're layering up kind of a mid layer, you know, over a base layer, it's all going to breathe as one piece, just like it does on a sheep's back. So that's really kind of the number one surprise to people. And so it comes back to what we said about kind of the length of the fiber and
sure.
The slenderness of it that really gives you that nice soft feeling. And we like to call it the Icebreaker hug, actually.
All right, Jeremy Tricola joining us, Icebreaker Merino Wool. We're going to talk more with him in a couple of seconds. Keep it here. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
I'm Lee Lukowski.
And I'm Tiffany Lukowski from the Crush TV.
And you're listening to Wild Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez. All over the Great Lakes State on the Michigan Talk Network. Make sure you hit up our Facebook page, wildmichiganradio.com, or Facebook.com/WildMichigan. We're giving away one of our pink Wild Michigan sweatshirts as Breast Cancer Awareness Month continues throughout the month of October. Pretty simple stuff. Just go to our website, like the page, and you can comment the name of a loved one as we, you know, hope for some better things with breast cancer, maybe finding a cure someday. But in the meantime, helping those cope with those who do have it. Brought to you in part by Strother Archery. We are Wild Michigan, and we're speaking with Jeremy Tricola of Icebreaker Merino Wool. We got kind of into the science of merino wool, the properties. And Jeremy, one of the properties that you brought up off air, that and I appreciate you bringing to my attention again, was the antimicrobial properties, the ability to keep. Can I be just plain old redneck Duran for a minute? Just basically keep the stink off.
Absolutely. You know, what it comes down to with kind of cotton fibers, synthetic fibers, you know, all those fibers are smooth. So anytime you have kind of a smooth surface, that's what bacteria sticks to. And that's what kind of, you know, allows microorganisms to proliferate. And that's ultimately what's going to cause odor, right? So when we're talking about merino is a scaled fiber. So you can kind of correlate it, you know, to human hair. Since it's scaled, it doesn't have those smooth surfaces. So it's as simple as that. You know, without those smooth surfaces, you know, you don't have those kind of bacteria sticking to it. So you can honestly wear a piece of icebreaker merino for, you know, 30-plus days. If you're not washing, you know, that stink's going to be on your skin, but it's not going to be retained in the garment. You know, another thing that happens with stench and body odor is that it happens when sweat's allowed to stay on your skin for kind of a prolonged period of time. So when we go back to what we were talking about with the ability to kind of move moisture right out through the garment, you know, with that breathability, it's taking longer for the sweat to form, and then it's being wicked right away from your skin. So it's a double whammy, right? Because mm-hmm. you don't have a fiber that's allowing the bacteria to stick to it, and you don't have that sweat buildup that's going to cause bacteria to kind of create in the first place.
You know, that's pretty important because we talked to my good friend Nick Munt from Michael Wandel's Bone Collector in the first hour of the show. He was hunting Alaska, hunting moose, and it's like 12 days without a shower. I'm unfathomable to me, but it happens sometimes when you're on these long hunts and you're out there tracking, and to be able to keep that away is really beneficial.
Yeah, you know, when you're out there in the backcountry, the fact that you don't have to pack as much stuff, and especially up in Alaska where you might be flying out into the bush, weight restrictions is such a huge deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with merino, it's as far as a warmth to weight ratio goes, it really can't be beat. So the fact that you don't have to pack as much gear, the stuff that you do pack is lightweight and it's going to keep you warm, it's kind of a no-brainer.
And what's nice, you guys have a lot of the base layers, t-shirts, the long john type things. You even have like a neck gaiter, and you can get them if you like the mossy oak or you like the real tree. You guys produce those, and when it's applied to the garment, I'm not sure of the process, but sometimes when you get those patterns applied to a garment, the colors are kind of wonky. You know, they're kind of yellow or not, but the colors on these look quite nice and crisp. Should you be exposed, or maybe you're hunting fall, and this is all you're wearing, and they're very true to form.
Yeah, and part of that is that merino has the ability to hold really kind of deep, vivid colors. And it's not something that's going to wash out over time. So if you think about kind of your favorite cotton t-shirt that's probably faded as all get out, that's not something that happens with merino. So the fact that it's able to kind of retain those deep, vivid colors, and then you can wash it 100 times and it's still going to be really kind of deep and vivid, is obviously great for camo. But, you know, we do a lot of great colors for both men and women as well that holds a really beautiful color to it.
Jeremy Tricola from Icebreaker Merino is joining us here on the show. Jeremy, what about care? Is this something we really have to be careful, or can we wash it like regular garments?
Machine wash cold, hang to dry. You know, we don't recommend using kind of wool light or kind of specific wool cleaners because in most cases those are kind of directed towards old traditional wool. You also don't want to use a fabric softener. It's not going to kind of ruin the garment, but it will leave kind of a film across it. So machine wash cold, hang to dry. And steering clear of fabric softeners and kind of wool-like conditioners and things like that.
Pretty simple. And you know, the other thing about this, too, for people who don't know, renewable resource, they're shearing. They're not slaughtering. For those who are concerned about that, look, we hunt, we fish, but we care about the resources in general. And this is something, this is just a shearing process like everything else with sheep.
Absolutely. You know, we shear them about one time a year. You get about 12 to 15 pounds of merino off every sheep, and you know that accounts for about 5 to 6 garments per year per sheep. 100% renewable resource, harvesting the wool from them from about age 2 to age 14.
So that's a long, for those who care, that's a long free range happy life. It's very important because, like I said, there are people that care about that, and we want to include everyone here on Wild Michigan. Let's quickly go to some new things you have in your lineup with Icebreaker Marina Loft.
Yeah, Marina Loft's a new initiative for us this fall winter season. It's a pretty cool. It's actually the warmest piece we've ever made. It's actually a durable, water-resistant poly outer. It's a recycled poly outer, I should mention. And then we're actually lining it with merino on the inside. So, you know, it kind of looks like a down jacket, except you've got the merino inside. You've also got 100% merino liner. So we're sticking with always having, you know, 100% merino next to skin. And what's so great about having a merino fill is that we know that wool is going to help keep you warm when you're wet. So that's really what separates it from, you know, whether it's a synthetic fill or a down fill, is that, you know, if you do get caught out in the rain wearing the merino loft, you are going to stay warm. And on top of kind of all those great properties we already talked about, from the breathability to the fact that it's not going to hold odor.
Sure. Now, could you give us the website where we can find Icebreaker Merino Wool? I know you can Google search Icebreaker Merino, but there's a direct way to get there.
Yes, sir. For folks that are keen to get a little bit more information, you can always check out kind of the video section on icebreaker.com. Got a lot of cool videos on there that can kind of show you right where these sheep live. There's some beautiful scenery, beautiful nature, and all the way kind of through the shearing process and down to, you know, our sustainable kind of factories and kind of see the process through from sheep's back to your back.
Very cool. Jeremy Tricola, Icebreaker, Merino Wool, I appreciate you joining us. I know I'm barking up the wrong tree on this, but should I be able ever to suggest? I was thinking about this last night when I was thinking about fishing for salmon in the rivers and the streams. Add just a little loop of garment at the base of your base layers for the pants, and you would have a fancy wader garment to wear underneath. So you
yep, and that's something that we certainly have in the works as far as getting a stirrup on there on a lightweight legging that will only make it a better help for wading.
Well, good. Great minds are thinking alike then, because I was thinking to myself, you know, I really like this stuff, and I think as a base layer to my waders, a legging with the stirrup would be perfect. But damn, you guys beat me to it.
Well, we always appreciate the feedback, so. You never hesitate to let us know.
Not at all. Check them out, icebreaker.com, Merino Wool. Jeremy, I appreciate you joining us, and we will be in contact again, I'm sure.
Duran, thank you so much.
Not at all. Appreciate it. Icebreaker, Merino Wool. So, we've been using this, like I said, for the past year. Very, very good stuff. Very happy to be testing that out here on Wild Michigan. Lots of things going on around the country. In Michigan here a few years back, we had CWD, the chronic wasting disease in the Lower Peninsula. It was found on a deer preserve. It shut down baiting in the Lower Peninsula. Well, there's been a third deer in a year found with CWD. Now, this is in Wisconsin. Don't panic. This is in Wisconsin on a preserve there. The Wisconsin Department of Agriculture reports that a third deer has tested positive for chronic wasting disease at the Wilderness Whitetails Private Hunting Preserve in Marathon County, all within the past year. A state-imposed 5-year quarantine on the facility permits the owner to move the deer between his preserve and 3 game farms and continue hunts, but he cannot sell live deer. Very, 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 very different than here in Michigan. And then in Iowa, a massive CWD outbreak on an Iowa deer farm, yet another farm. 356 deer destroyed. The Iowa Department of Agriculture reported that a captive herd comprised of 356 deer was destroyed on a north central Iowa preserve in late August after about 280 tested positive for CWD. And this is what happens when you allow these diseases to sit and percolate on a game farm, said Brian Richards, the CWD project leader in at the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center. And that's coming out of Des Moines. So CWD on the rise in some of these facilities. And really, we're keeping an eye on it here in Michigan as well. But no more reports as of yet. If you missed any of this show, visit us on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Join us on Facebook, facebook.com/wildmichigan. Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.